Hello, friends. Welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Allison Coton, an interaction designer at EPAM Continuum. If you have kids and live anywhere near a swimming pool, I bet you've heard the term attractive nuisance. It's something with the potential to be dangerous, unsupervised children around deep water, but it's also nearly irresistible, a pool when the temperature is 90 degrees. We don't blame the kids for wanting to swim, and we don't blame the family with the pool for having the coolest backyard on the block. Instead, we face reality and take some reasonable safety precautions. Swimming lessons, a higher fence, a sturdy pool cover. This harm reduction mentality translates to grown-ups in the workforce too, faced with the next generation of large language models that are perhaps companies' most attractive and dangerous present-day nuisance. It's no good to ask employees to just walk away from using LLMs in ways that could be hazardous, Val Tislik, VP Head of Data and Analytics, tells Sam Raymond, our Chief Information Security Officer and SVP. The cover's off that proverbial swimming pool, so rather than making rules that busy and curious people are inclined to break, it's time to focus on training for safer behaviors. Beyond the table stakes of data security and IP protection, there's also a needed cultural shift towards a savvier workforce who can collaborate effectively with their new AI assistants without inadvertently sharing too much. Let's hear Sam and Val's thoughts on what it might take to get us there.
Hey, Val. How you been, man? Good to have you. So everybody's talking about LM and data and security and so on. So this sounds like a good chance for you and I just to chat about the topic. So I know you got a lot of ideas and experience around in the area, so love to hear your thoughts on it. I want to chime in as well, but you want to kick it off first?
Sure. Hi, Sam. It's good to talk to you, and I think this is one of the more interesting subjects we approach with our customers. And while I think there's some, you know, very, very arcane subjects, when it comes to LLM security and you start kind of thinking through this, you can get pretty deep down that rabbit hole and start thinking about very, very complex scenarios, very complex attack vectors. But I think today, what I see is most of our customers and us ourselves are trying to think through some fairly fundamental, some fairly kind of basic things that you need to kind of put in front of you before you go ahead and start building applications, start providing some sort of services to your clients. And I don't know if that's the same experience you've had so far. It would be interesting to see what kind of discussions you have today.
It's all over the place, Val. You're spot on. I think there is the more practical, then there is the more, I really don't know where it's going to go. So, you know, asking questions from top to bottom. But I think, you know, primarily for security, you know, if you were to categorize the list of problems, it comes down to confidentiality, privacy, compliance, and what is proper usage. Those are the four pillars, if you will, for LLM. And it's no different from, in some ways, when we transition over on-prem to cloud, from, you know, using one set of data set to unstructured data set. A lot of those are not too different, but there are some nuances, as you mentioned. But coming back to Earth, though, to be, you know, to in line with what you're saying, most people are still just asking about where, you know, when is it safe to use it? They want to crawl before they walk, you know, so in a sense that they want to know what is okay to use, what is okay to ask, what is okay to push out to a public versus private, when to use an API and so on. Those are still some of the top, you know, practical questions. The more longer, more esoteric discussion around, you know, ethical, non-ethical, around those are discussions.
I agree. And I think that this, especially the question of having, you know, today, in realistically, most of the things that our clients are experimenting are something that is provided either through all our major cloud providers. And obviously Microsoft and OpenAI have been ahead of the game. And what kind of the most fundamental question that everybody asks is, hey, is my data safe? If I'm interacting with that, I agree. It's a very similar discussion that we've had with a sort of fundamental cloud. Can I go to a cloud? Can I put my data on a cloud? It's a very, very similar set of discussions today, whether should I be using Microsoft, should I be using OpenAI, should I be using Google or, you know, Amazon Bedrock, and what are the security guarantees, what are the privacy guarantees. And I think, you know, in my opinion, and I don't know if you feel the same, is that what kind of Microsoft is putting out today is a message. It's a fairly kind of reasonable and solid message in terms of, you know, providing some level of privacy, providing some level that, that this data will not be used in further training, so therefore will not be memorized by LLM. So I think that the work is certainly not complete. It's not a comprehensive kind of set of guarantees and protections. But I think that the direction is good, and I feel fairly confident that that's maybe for many of our customers is the right way to proceed with a, you know, kind of looking at the LLM, Gen AI capabilities versus moving things into their own infrastructure in dealing with all the complexities, all the issues, and actually even more complexities around security that actually arise if you start fine-tuning and training your own models.
Yeah, and by that same token, the answer that I typically give is the same, that you need to ask yourself, you know, LLM or, you know, AI or not AI, first and foremost, ask yourself, are you comfortable letting somebody with a set of guarantee that they provide, as you pointed out, like in Microsoft case, are you comfortable with somebody handling that data? That's the first thing you have to ask yourself, just like any SaaS operation. And that baseline should not change, in my opinion. That baseline should stay the same, and not confuse it with, is it LLM? Is it storing in a flat file? Is it storing somewhere else? Is it being used to train? That stays the same. So first and foremost, you have to ask yourself that question. What classification of data are you okay with handing it off to external and usage and within that model, if that model is well contained within your own dedicated tenant and so on and protection around it? That's number one. Second question is, the second order question is, are you okay with the necessary controls around derived data? And this is where, at least from a security perspective, where data security is, it confuses people or sometimes scares people, is that just like compile, just like churned data, just like reprocessed, just like dedupe data, derived data is basically something that is based on a certain set of data and then derive it. So just like your NN propositions, those are derived from exactly what set you have originally. From that aspect of it, that data is still sorted based on a pedigree from the original source data that, you know, you care about, you provide, and so on. As long as the control is necessary for that derived data, meaning, you know, I don't, or provided does not use that trained data to then actually train a different model and so on, meaning the derived data still stay within that protection realm, then you are treating with a known entity. And that to me is maybe another way to phrase what you just said. It's a very rational way to look at securing, you know, the control. And that's what I meant by, you know, crawl first. Make sure that you have the data classification, the data actually have the necessary control provided by the provider, that you can trust them to handle that set of data. Then from then onwards, making sure that the derived data and the source data is not leaking out of that tenant. That's the key in step one, if you ask me. So I agree with it. And I think that's really what is needed for people to really, you know, remove that veil, that uncertainty to some degree. And then we can talk about more interesting models. We can talk about more interesting ideas. But as long as you stay within that realm and make sure that whether you go through with APIs, whether you go through with prompts and so on, then there was the question of usage. That's the whole different ballgame, because the three key attack vectors on ultimately that we're seeing right now is, you know, A, prompt, anywhere from prompt injection to metadata over to prompt, that's number one. B, it's around the trained data, which is, you know, the source of the data, where, you know, if that could be modified, then could be corrupted, then it's, yes, it's going to train and modify. And then C, which is the infrastructure. The provider provides a lot of measure within that C constraint, which is on infrastructure, the storage part. That, as long as that's being protected as a tenant, the A and the B, I think it's tackled in different ways, that it's much more within how you manage your team, how they can actually access those, setting up the necessary policies to make sure that they funnel those access points within a set of constrained access, that's much more manageable. But I think you and I were saying the same thing. Let's not you know, turn this into a whole different, completely, you know, vague idea as if it's a monster. It's not. It's something that I truly believe that, you know, yes, we need to be very careful about how we use it, just like we should be careful about cloud and other data storage. But at the same time, if we muddle too many different concepts together, we're going to end up having a cloud, you know? And I don't mean a good kind of cloud.
I agree. And one of the questions, because as you were talking through this, I imagine, you know, our team's having a very interesting discussion, right? Let's be honest, until recently, AI teams and security teams have not been spending nearly as much time as they are doing today. Okay. And it's an interesting discussion where a lot of new terminology gets introduced and a lot of new kind of technology, right? I mean, until, you know, maybe 6 or 8 months ago, embeddings and vector databases were not part of something that, you know, as a security team would go and evaluate for as a potential kind of opportunities to as a threat. So how do you see that's gonna work out? And are you seeing that all the security guys are taking their prompt 101 and learning AI, and that our AI teams are getting a little bit more conscious of security concepts there, or you think that there's going to be maybe that there's need for sort of additional, maybe somebody who will bridge both of those skill sets and both of those notions?
That's an amazing question. I'm missing something not very popular. ML is a much better tool set for the bad guys than the good guys. and I think I always joke about this. I said, you know, it's okay for the attacker to hit 10 punches and only land one punch because he still can knock the guy out. But it's not okay for the defender to defend only one punch. It's not going to help you. So false positive or, you know, any kind of system that's not based on a much more exact set of data set or result set that's repeatable. And both threat transparency and repeatability is absolutely critical for threat hunting and security. Anything that to that degree is you know, got to be very difficult for defender to use. But at the same time, the attackers have been using this for a long time. If you look at, you know, the data set, you can understand it, and I'm going beyond just, you know, typical scanners. Scanners, obviously, you know, phishing schemes, obviously, you now see there's, you know, bots to figure out, you know, do targeted, you know, spear phishing. That's obvious. Those are low hanging fruit, first order thinking of attack. The bigger problem is one of my friends was talking about yesterday with me is machine to machine, really, because the attackers are so much more advanced, to be very frank with you, on their tool set. And it's impossible for the defender not to use it. And it's sad because it is typical that the defenders are always falling behind. It's only natural because we're always in the dark. And so it's a must for security experts to learn what is the best way to use it. Now, interesting thing, though, is we have vast amount of data, our logs, our sensors, our packets, our behaviors, you know, all sets of information. We pull into systems like EDRs and SIMs and so on. We've been doing this for a long, long time. The problem, though, is we're mostly looking for signatures. We're looking for things that is, you know, hey, here's a signal that's a guarantee, it's a zero or one. What we have not been very good at from a secure perspective is to look for more for trends, to look more for, I wouldn't say predict it, but at least to understand a little bit more about where things potentially are to help us. Because the biggest problem, ultimately, every CISO would tell you, the one thing, the biggest problem every CISO would tell you is prioritization. We don't know where to put the most, you know, best resource in where. That's the toughest part. AI seems to have a great, great potential in helping around prioritization, understanding, you know, is it left or is it right? You know, which one would be better, what the models are, and give us better chance of running the model without, you know, for example, simulation. We've been doing simulations for years, but at the same time, can we actually run those simulations fast enough to model like 3 or 4 different types of model and see what the impact is? We can run those today by hand. We can run those with some of the tools. But do we actually understand what the impact, you know, is going to be? We don't know too much about that. So there's a lot of used revenue. And that, not just, not to mention vulnerability management, which is no-brainer using ML and AI. But we haven't been doing that, honestly, again, because there's lack of a push from the attacker side. Now the attackers are using ML and AI substantially, including actually stealing resources and you know, host resources. Like, you know, if you look at Hajime, what happened back there is they're exactly stealing CPU time to actually do what they need to do to generate payload. That's the type of model that they're using to find their attack, the kill chain, towards the path of getting what they need to get to. You have to understand that for security, we have to come together. And it's more than just about securing data set. It's really, we need to learn more about what is the best way to utilize it. The prompts for threat hunters, no doubt about it. But I think there is a lot more that could be done around, you know, can we actually find out clusters of information that could help us prioritize where to put our effort in?
And as you mentioned, I think this is that, you know, one thing that allows you very, very often to detect the threat is sort of repeatability, right? There is, as you mentioned, some signature. So as this model become, you know, again, like LLMs, there's a great number, great opportunity for true randomness there. So that makes it even more challenging, right? Because the signatures will become also basically effectively a lot more kind of random in statistical in nature, and you have to kind of take this game to a next level, which is, I think, is exciting and interesting for us as ML experts, but probably a nightmare.
In fact, it's worse than entropy. So the attacker used entropy for years, which is randomness around it, for years, for evasion. So if you look at MITRE ATT&CK, that's the main part of evasion, which is how do they avoid and increase the dwell time and avoid being detected, to your point. They've been using entropy for, on their side. We use entropy too a lot. I mean, entropy is our biggest, you know, ally. They use entropy. They use, you know, randomness factors, you know, a lot. But it's worse now because they're doing mimicking. Meaning, it's one thing to say, I can't tell because there was so much noise between, you know, Ken or Val. It's a whole different ballgame if an attacker is starting to look very much like Val. So the whole ballgame of UBA, right, user behavior analytics, That I feel bad for people, you know, within that area, because it's become a really difficult thing. It's becoming harder and harder to tell. I'm not even talking about like deepfaking voice attack, deepfaking video attack. Put those things aside. Just your clicks, just your time to call API, what type of API to call when do you log in your, you know, application, your laptop, what location do you based on, you know, to log in your laptop. If they can forge it, which they can, to learn that behavior, it's really difficult for me to pick out the good guys from the bad guys.
Yeah. And sort of a following up on this subject, I think that, you know, naturally, as you're seeing all of the sort of complexity that you have with implementing LLMs or dealing with LLMs, any sort of the natural, and we see this for some of the clients, their natural kind of inclination is to say, stop, right? Let's just shut it down. Let's close it as much of this as possible. Let's not use it. And at the same time, I think the market pressure is going to be enormously high for everybody to go and adopt the LLMs and adopt the all the technology and architectures within the LLMs as quickly as possible. Right. So I think that there's going to be a lot more risk taking that will be forced into the CISO organization that you would normally be comfortable, just because the competition is going to start running away with this sometimes, you know, without any kind of consideration or sort of risk be, you know, we're taking all the risk possible just to get there out on the market. What's your advice today in terms of where on that, how do you deal with that kind of complexity, and how do I deal with the trade-offs around this?
Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts on that too, but I'll tell you my perspective, and then maybe I'll swing back to you and hear what you think about it. So I might surprise you a little bit. I think completely stopping is a mistake. I personally think so. I, even from a security perspective, because when you stop something completely, you can't understand it. And if you can't understand it, you can't protect it. I'm making it very simple, but it's true on everything, on every level. There is no such thing as, you know, let's go back home and figure out how to protect something and go back out in a while. You get knocked out immediately. So my recommendation is actually a three-prong approach. Number one, it is true. You shouldn't just allow everything. Stop in the sense that there is a good amount of stopping, but I think it's much more around funneling it to a smaller set. Run experiments, run smaller set, understanding what's actually being used. Second, monitor. And then third, rollout controls, which is, you know, make sure that you don't, I mean, it's free for all, Wild Wild West, and of course, that's irresponsible completely. I would strongly recommend that you set up a quick set of policy and say, where are we willing to actually take a certain amount of risk? Where are we not? Very, again, going back to basics, you classify your data. Just have a policy, for example, to say, you know, anything that's on a higher classification, whatever that is for you, for your company, PII, SI, whatever that is, nothing within that domain. But for the rest of the sets of data information, you can go through this channel to use it. Then have that channel be monitored substantially, which is learn from it, understand what people are asking, understand what people are getting, learn from that set, make sure the team understand that we're watching that stream, not because we don't trust you, but because we need to understand how is it being used and what the results are and increase the quality and gradually start to add controls over it. That's the model that I would strongly recommend. Then run separate silo experiments on products carefully built out and so on. Those separate ones completely, you know, obviously it makes sense, but those are sandboxes. But you need to understand what is useful for your team, what is not. So that's actually my recommendation to the team. But yes, you can't just say, you know, it's free for all. You can't just log in as you treat, you know, in the same way as Google and say, you know, just Google something or whatever. Even today, I don't know if people understand that. You're not supposed to just Google for, you know, if you have confidential information, would you dump that confidential information on the Google search bar? If you're doing that, that's just, you're violating your compliance as well. I don't know if people understand that. That doesn't change versus is a search bar versus is a problem. It's still a problem. So that is a no-go anyway. The rest of it, control it, monitor it, then set it to control is what I would recommend. How do you see it, Val? What do you think?
So first of all, I completely agree with you that it is impossible to shut it down. In reality, just like, and I think your comparison with Google in that sense is accurate. It's the same as telling the entire organization, hey, you no longer can use Google search, right? You'll just basically force your entire organization to do this from sort of a, you know, through VPNs, people will find because the benefits and attractiveness of what this OpenAI and other tools provide is so kind of interesting. There's so much potential that especially our teams, our developers will definitely find their way to kind of use it effectively, use it and, you know, kind of avoid sort of this complete prohibition. So instead, and this is where, you know, we've been doing this for a while, creating some, actually enabling this access in a controlled manner is actually much more beneficial. And I think it just as you want to give access to the employees, to the tools, and as you're saying, monitor and understand it, you probably want to, I think that it's the same actually for the applications. It's even more important actually for applications, because I bet you, you know, in organizations that will start creating, you know, a lot of the, many of these applications in 6, 7, 8 months, finding out how many of them actually effectively reaching out to the public network, connecting to various APIs is going to be extremely difficult unless you put together a reasonable and reasonably permissive policy to sort of exploit it. Otherwise, first of all, again, as I said, people will find a way. And secondly, I think that if I told my, for example, ML team that they're not allowed to play with LLMs, I think we will lose half of the team tomorrow, right? Because they will find somewhere where there's an opportunity to take advantage of this new technology and build more and exciting applications. So I think that's just a non-starter. I suspect, though, that there's going to be such a rush and such a pressure to release this the applications and be the, you know, the first mover advantage in the market, that many companies will release less than thought through and less than sort of thoroughly validated applications to the customer base, and I think we will see some of the sort of pushback fairly soon, you know, as more and more of this is happening. So when I'm thinking through this, I'm still thinking that many of these tools are much more effectively being delivered through some sort of intermediary. So, for example, as in the scenario where it's not directly, for example, directly to the consumer, but maybe a tooling for an employee that works with your consumer, with your customer, is sort of creating some set of safety checks and some sort of basically common sense controls before we unleash this on our customer base and have all sorts of threats, you know, from, you know, people sort of reputational threats to really kind of a, you know, maybe, you know, started using in the decision making things that are just out, you know, just inaccurate and fictitious. So, but again, I'm actually excited. I think that this, you know, any organization needs to be having and thinking through some sort of a AI and generative AI strategy, and that security, that meaningful security policy, meaningful compliance policy, should be absolutely an essential part of that.
Yep, I can't agree more. And I often use because I'm old, I would use an old analogy. I'm not saying it's the same. It's, you know, I hate people always say, oh yeah, we've done this before. Well, that's not true. It is new. But at the same time, there was a lot of aspect that's common. I always joke about this, and people, you know this, but I spent time working on database for many, many years. And, you know, people used to joke about SQL. SQL was designed originally, as you know, as a language for managers, explicitly stated. It was a language for managers to generate reports. It was meant to be a system that, you know, they would log in a prompt and they would actually literally run select statement from the screen. That was the intent. The intent was not to actually hide behind an application, to hide behind an API, you know, not hide behind a back-end API like 3-4 levels down. That was the original intent until, A, you know, the world's, you know, moved on and realized that its value is a subset of the value, but could be exposed in a whole different fashion. It's much more natural to people. B, the granularity that allows them to, you know, a manager. And when I say manager, I'm not even talking about engineer manager. They're talking about like finance and so on, literally run SQL select statements. They realize that's too much learning. That's too much power in some ways for one person to figure out what that context looks like. And C, it's ultimately much more powerful if you can couple it with other tools, like you said, couple with other aspects, as you said. So I same here. I see it naturally. I think language is interesting, you know, and in expert systems aside, I think language understanding is a very interesting topic to communicate. But how is it gonna manifest itself inside of the application? I don't think we know that yet, but I would really doubt that in the future everything is just gonna be a prompt. I don't think that's the way that we're going to. There's a canonical form or a language, you know, natural language form versus structured form of data has a real reason. It's like binary versus analog. Binary is exact, but it's not flexible. Analog is very, very flexible, but it's not exact. You can't have both. You have to find a line between the two. They're both valuable. Same thing with canonical languages, you know, versus structured data. I think we need both. The question is, you know, what fits in where and how. That's why I wrapped around an application and or some kind of interface beyond it. It makes sense. I still think that's where the world is going. We'll play with it for a long, long time, I'm sure. We're going to see prompt on every application. Pretty soon we're going to, you know, I replace my Siri with, I'm sure you tried it. I actually use ChatGPT right now. I tied it together with shortcuts on my phone. And it's amazing. It's incredible. No offense to, you know, Siri, but it's doing a lot more than I couldn't do before with Siri. So that, sure, I'll have fun for that a little while. But is that really the final end all be all? I don't think so. I think it's going to be much more as part of a holistic system than something that just stands out by itself. But who knows? I don't have a crystal ball. So maybe
well. But one thing that we could probably all agree is that LLM will, whether it will be a core part of the any kind of enterprise application architecture or just a component of it, that greatly increases complexity of any enterprise application. Bringing any kind of statistical non-deterministic component into a system already makes it a lot more complex. And bringing something as complex as LLM is just, I think, it increases the orders of magnitude.
Yep.
And therefore, I think that introduces the number of risks and opportunities for kind of malicious behavior is increases probably at least proportional, or maybe even more so. So I think that basically means that your security team will have their work to cut out for them for a long, long time. And I think that before we actually really understand what is the real kind of software development life cycles around LLMs, what is the best practices of LLMs, I think we're probably looking for another couple of years of very interesting experimentation. And you know, I think this is where I'm looking forward, because I think this is where AI teams and security teams will be working much closer together on establishing this and understanding the kind of the art of possible.
I can't agree more. And I think for security and for, you know, data folks like yourself, this is really accelerating innovation. And I mean, what do we want more than just, you know, to have a chance to learn more? So I think it's very exciting. I think it's super exciting. We just need to make sure everybody understands. And, you know, back to your point, I think your question was still the best one, honestly, is that, you know, stay ahead of it, meaning, you know, don't be proactive, don't be passive, be proactive, set up your policies, making sure that you don't completely choke. I mean, if you suffocate it will come back and hurt you. So don't completely suffocate it, but set up your policies to manage it, and then to learn from it, understand and run experiment. That's the way to go. And otherwise, you know, your competitor might, you know, might of course leapfrog over you, but that even that is, I don't think it's the biggest question. I think the biggest question is, if you don't train your staff culturally, remember moving to the cloud was a big deal. I actually remember moving to databases, data storage, centralized data storage was a big deal. That's how old I am. But I remember going to the cloud was a huge cultural change for the and workforce. Moving to a model that has, you know, what do you call it, ML or intelligence or assisted, you know, development, whatever it is, moving to that model is also a cultural change. If you don't start inducing that into your culture within the company and start learning from it, that time lag is much more than building a product. Adding a feature in a product, I'm sure you can do it in 18 months. But to change an entire organization to be comfortable, to embrace, to like working with some form of computer-assisted decision-making, that's a whole different ballgame. If you don't start now, I don't know how much time you would need to catch up. And chances are you won't catch up, because your good guys will lead to other companies that actually would do it. And then you're left with a team that's really resisting the change anyway. Then you're stuck. So we can go on and on, but I think you know, we're you and I were advocating and preaching for the same thing, which is, you know, be mindful, be careful. At the same time, you know, don't close your blind eye to it, and try to embrace it in small chunks. Right? Would you agree?
I agree, and I think, you know, what would be interesting is to revisit this in about 6 to 8 months and listen to ourselves and probably have a good laugh on how sort of a naive our amusing work compared to how quickly this market is changing and how quickly that whole sort of entire our thinking about security and compliance is in with the advent of generative AI. But I think it was a great chat. Thank you.
That's a great idea. Let's do that. And I think it would be something like what happened when my wife just went back to her old house and brought back some old pictures, show it to the kids. One of them was me. You know, I'm bald now. Show it to the kids, where I used to have a mohawk, and so she showed one of those pictures. So I think it would be more embarrassing than that.
That's right. That's us in a tie dye jeans and in a mohawk.
That's right.
Our LLM security.
That's right. All right, man. So good to talk to you. Let's do it again soon.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business, experience, and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Thanks to Sam Raymond and Val Tislik for the great conversation. Cheers to Kit Palalis, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Hillary Teen, our producer, and Ken Gordon, our executive producer, on all their masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Allison Coton, and I'm off to my swim lesson.